Continuing in our Midrash series. So in the past, we've spoken about Yaakov and Esav. We learned a lot about them. We've learned about Bilhah and Zilpah. And so now we're moving actually to the more famous Imahos, Leah and Rachel. And we're going to focus today on a few areas of their character as developed in the Torah. But more specifically, I want to look at the way that the Midrash depicts them. Okay, so for example, the way in which we first encounter Leah and Rachel. So Yaakov, when he comes into town to Haran, he meets these shepherds at a well, and he asks them about Lavan, and they give him a little bit of information about Lavan, and then Rachel shows up with her sheep. Okay, Yaakov meets her, and they have a conversation. Yaakov tells her who he is. Yaakov indicates that he's a relative. He gives her a kiss, and then she goes home. And the Torah finishes that little depiction telling us that Rachel has a sister, and then it says, Ve'enei Leah rakos, v'Rachel I saw yifas Torah, yifas Maria. That Leah's eyes are rakos, and Rachel is yifas Torah, yifas Maria. I mean, so the question is, you know, when if Rachel is described as being in Eile Rakos, Rachel I say Yifas Torah, Yifas Moreh. Rachel is being described as being just beautiful. That's Yifas Torah, Yifas Moreh. Although I did see one commentary says Rachel Hayisa Yifas Torah, Yifas Moreh. That Rachel was or had been, and she was no longer because she had spent so much time out in the sun with the sheep that whatever she had been, she was no longer. Which is interesting because it really goes back to a different question, which is, how old is Rachel at the time when Yaakov meets her? And therefore, like, is she really, or was she really, and she's no longer? What does that mean? Anyway, but the pasuk describes, in comparison to Rachel's being described as a Yifas Torah, Yifas Mareh, which is somebody who's just pretty and who's pleasant to look at, Rachel, Leah, rather, is described as being Enei Leah Rakos, Leah's eyes. Leah's eyes. And what does Rakos mean? What does Rakos mean? And what does that say about Leah? Right? In other words, why is she depicted as having eyes in some way, and nothing about her actual beauty? You know, assuming that that's an important character trait, versus Rachel's being described as beautiful. So, what I shared with you here is there's a Gemara in Bava Basra, Chav Gimel Amud Aleph 123a, and there's a parallel midrash in the Yalkut Shimoni in Parshas Vayetze, which describes a number of suggestions as to what the word rakos means. Some translate the word rakos to mean weak, some translate it to mean soft. We'll actually see, I'll show you quickly some of the commentaries about this on the back of page 2, which we'll get to in a couple minutes. Okay, but these are the essential ideas. I'm not going to read through the whole Gemara, but the first opinion is that what does it mean that they're weak? You know, are you trying to indicate something about her being ugly? So the Gemara says that bignus behemet tmeya lo dibra kasuv. Right? Sometimes the Torah, when it describes an animal, which is, you know, in English we would just call it a non-kosher animal. So in the depiction of the animals that Noah took onto the ark, it says that he took the behemah tehora, the pure animals, and the animals which are einena tahora, okay. So and the animals which are not tahor. So therefore, the Gemara says, "Bignus tzadikim dibra akasuv." Is the Torah describing her as being like somebody with weak eyes because she's crying all the time? That's one assumption which is made about her. And so the first view is Rabbi Elazar, who says that matno seha aruchos, that rakos comes from the word aruchos, which means long. In other words, she has a long list of gifts that were given to her. And what were the gifts that were given to her? So it's not described here, but if you look, is it described here? No, it's not described here specifically. Okay, but if you look at the Midrash, in the parallel, around halfway down, where you see the words matnosah aruchos, it says kahuna levia umalchus, that from Leah's children, you have Kahuna, right? Because remember, Kahuna comes from Aaron's family, which is in the tribe of Levi. Levia, the Levi family, is from the tribe of Levi. Okay, and Malchus, kingship, comes from Yehuda. So those are two of Leah's sons. And so Leah gets all of that to, in her progeny. That's what it means. That Ene Leah Rakos means that, I guess, her eyes have a vision of what's going to be coming. So that's one approach. Another way of understanding what Leah Rakos, Ene Leah Rakos means, that her eyes were in fact weak. What were they weak from? So the Gemara tells a story that Leah would sit at the crossroads and she would hear people, right? In those days, you didn't have Facebook and Twitter and ways for word to get around, and you didn't have things blasted in the New York Times. But how did information get across? People were traveling all the time. And what do people do? Same machala you have today, people would say Lashon Hara. And what's Lashon Hara? All the gossip that people would like to say. And say, Rivka has two sons. Lavan has, these are the meddling shadchanim of the day. Rivka has two sons. Lavan has two daughters. Obviously, it's a perfect match. Okay, the older one will marry the older one, and the younger one will marry the younger one. End of story. And Leah's saying, hey, people, you know, what do you know about Esav? And they would say about him, oh, Ishra, it's about a third of the way down. The first word is Ishrahu. He's a bad guy. Melastein Brios, he's a robber. And Katan Mama said, what do you say about the younger one? Ishtam Yoshev Ahalim. He's a simple guy. He sits in tents and he's just a good fellow. So she would cry and rub her eyes all the time over the fact that this is her lot in life and her eyelashes fell out. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody who has no eyelashes, but it's probably not a pretty picture. You know, when you think about it, eyelashes are weird, but then when you think about it more, you say, well, no eyelashes are even weirder, right? Okay, same thing about eyebrows. Like, it's the strangest thing. Why do we need to have hair here? But then you see somebody without eyebrows, you go, whoa, that's weird. Okay, so that's the idea. That's the idea. Later, so in other words, her eyes were weak because she was crying over what seemed to be her lot or her destiny. Okay, and then it goes on to describe here how Leah is later on depicted in the Torah as Vayar Hashem ki sinua Leah. That Leah, God saw that Leah was hated. Hated. What does it mean, hated? So he says the same, the Gemara says the same thing. What are you trying to say? That she was actually hated? Rather, the same idea is that sinuin ma'asa Esav b'faneha. It's not that she was hated, that she hated the deeds of Esav, and so she wanted to make her marriage to Yaakov work. And that was an important element of the story. Okay, now there are other things in here about the signs that Rachel purportedly gave to Leah. We'll get back to that in a couple minutes. Okay, if you turn over the page. Okay, so the Midrash and Bereish. So again, I mentioned that the Yalkut Shimoni parallels that Gemara. It's the Yalkut Shimoni Parshas Vayetzei 125, and here we have a Midrash Rabbah who also touches this, but actually adds an additional component to how we are to understand Leah's eyes, the depiction of Leah's eyes. So the second line, it says that they were rakos mibichia, that they were weakened, I guess, from all the crying that she would do, and she would pray. Third line, yihi ratzon shelo apogarlo shel rasha, it should be God's will that I should not fall into the lottery. I shouldn't fall, so to speak, into the hands of this. Of this wicked guy, Esav. Rav Huna kasha yatfila shebat las gzeira, and Rav Huna learns from there. What's amazing is that how powerful tefillah can be, because it nullified whatever decree. I don't know what the decree was. Who decreed that Leah was supposed to marry Esav? It just sounds like it's a bunch of yappers on the road who were saying these kind of suggestions. I mean, what kind of shirk is that, where Leah is hearing that there's a guy who lives 100 miles away who you happen to be related to, you know, he's your cousin, and so maybe it's a good shirk. I mean, what kind of stupid criteria is that for marrying people off? Oh, you're a boy, he's a girl. She's a girl. Right? I'm sorry, you're a girl, he's a boy, and you're the older, and you're the older. Oh, perfect match, ridiculous. So she davens. Not only that, she ended up getting married before her sister. The only thing that Rachel had going for her was that she was pretty, whereas Leah was Yirei Shemaim, she was God-fearing. And that is what is another thing which is indicated. So if you want to talk about who might be a more perfect match for Yaakov, You know, again, it's not fair to play that game. You know, Yaakov meets Rachel first and he falls in love with her. Who knows? If he had met Leah first, would he have fallen in love with her? I have no idea. I don't know. We can't rewrite the history in that sense. But the Midrash and Bereishis Rambam is telling us that Leah had additional qualities beyond her looks. Okay, and that's. Okay, and so the Midrash Sechel Tov goes a different direction in talking about Rachel's beauty. Rachel is Yifas Tovar Bekoma, that she was tall, Yifas Mareh B'dmus, and she was pretty, and that's really what those are the main qualifications which she seemed to have. Okay, now, we know more about Rachel. Rachel is legendary in terms of other things which we're going to get to soon when we get into the next section, which is the signs. But if you look now here in the Midrash Tanchuma Parshas Vayetze, it gives us another perspective on what Leah's eyes were. So the first thing that you see in the bold, Tirgem Turmanesh Rabbi Yosi Mao Rachos Tiranios Perush Agilos, that Rachos describes the shape of Leah's eyes. Okay, in other words, she had Agilos, more rounded eyes. I'm not really sure how to depict that. I mean, you know, eyes. I guess it really depends on the culture and where in the world a person's from, which might determine the shape of the eye. There are different ways to see this, and it's amazing what makeup can do. I once saw an article. I don't know if it was a real article, but there was a crazy article about some lady in China, something like that, who had gotten a tremendous amount of surgery in order to look like she was straight out of a magazine. Okay, but of course surgery can change you, but it doesn't change your DNA. And so her husband marries her, knows nothing about the surgery or whatever. Even if he does know about it, his wife is gorgeous, and then she gives birth, and the baby is just Yeah. Anyway, looking nothing like what the wife looks like now. And the article was saying how he either sued her or he wanted to end the marriage over ugly baby. That was the headline. And it was a crazy story. But it showed a picture of this woman beforehand, before all the surgery, and it shows the baby, or I don't know if it showed the baby, but basically you get the idea of like, oh, okay, well, if the baby looks like what her DNA makes her look like, and you see what she looks like now, you can understand that the father has a very, or her husband has a very different view, because he's expecting this. But the one thing that I remember thinking when I saw that article was, you know, the eyes, there's only so much you can do to the eyes when it comes to even surgery. And you know, the eyes have whatever shape that they had, and they didn't really change. It's just that you know, but everything else was fixed up, if you will. So the first idea is Rakos Tiranios, which is Agilos, so some kind of round. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's not correct. Rakos is Aruchos, and we saw this before, that she had a lot of blessings. That she had many, many blessings. Kahuna, Gedola, Malchus, Shaman Mishcha, right? So the having the Kohen Gadol come from her, kingdom, kingship, the anointing oil, all these are some of the gifts that were given to Leah, and as opposed to Rachel, who didn't get that. So Rachel was, so Rachel was also concerned later on that maybe Esav would take her because she hadn't given birth to a child. That was one of the arguments which is made. Remember when Rachel comes over to Yaakov after Leah has had four children and Rachel has nothing, and she says, give me a child, and if you don't, then I may as well be dead. What does that mean? So some say somebody who doesn't have any children is like somebody who's dead. Okay, I mean, it doesn't mean that. What it means is about their place in society and how they shouldn't be ignored and neglected. Sometimes it happens that people who live in a community where everybody has a family and then they don't have children. So what is that? You know, they're just viewed differently. And so, you know, the idea of somebody who doesn't have children is like dead means don't ignore them. Also part of the community and, you know, worthy of being treated properly despite you know, not fitting in that way, so to speak. I'm not saying that it's not a way to fit in. Anyway, but Rachel was concerned, and there is a whole line in the Midrash about that, that Rachel was concerned because she didn't have children, that Yaakov would get rid of her, and that who would pick her up? Esav. So she didn't want that. So in other words, the tides, in a sense, had turned. If you accept the narrative that said that Leah was crying over the idea that she would fall into the hands of Esav, that was her lot in life, and that's why she was crying. So similarly, Rachel might have a similar feeling before she's blessed to have Yosef. Okay? Now, the Midrash Tanchuma also, which is presented here, which is entitled the Alamadenu Rabbeinu, has another view just depicting Leah when she would hear that that people were saying that she should marry Esav. So if you look in the bold, she would cry and she would say, Rachel and I, my sister, we came from one womb. Now, I'm not sure, and the authorities on this are split over it, were Rachel and Leah also twins? Right? Saying that they came from one womb could mean that they came from the same pregnancy, but it could also mean that they have the same mother, which, you know, we don't have any twins, as you know, but they all came from the same womb, just at different times. So this is the idea that she was assumed that she was supposed to marry Esav, and then she would cry as a result of this. And Rachel, when she heard that Yaakov was going to marry her, she was very happy. But came and chenasu stay in Yaakov. Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu, so shayis abochem esanev, son of Maase Esav, muspalel sefanai bedin shelo tisrachi menos tzadik. I already knows in the banim chila. Okay, then in other words, what the Midrash is saying is that all of the tsar, all of the pain, all of the suffering that Leah had in anticipation of possibly marrying Esav, okay, ended up serving to her merit, because God looks at her and says, look, she's been crying, she's been fasting, she hates Maase Esav, the deeds of Esav, and she's been praying before me bedin so that she should not be distanced from Yaakov. Guess what I'm going to do for her? I'm going to give her children. And that's why Leah has not only a child first, but children first, four children before Rachel even realizes, oh my goodness, I'm having a problem. And she approaches Yaakov with that encounter where she says, Nu, what's going on? It's time for you to give me a child. And Yaakov says, well, it's not me, it's God. So you have to do that. And essentially what Yaakov is telling her is that you have to cry and fast and hate Maase Esav and pray before God. And that is is what ends up happening. And ultimately, Rachel ends up having a child. But it's not until after the Dudaim episode, that, as we're going to soon see, that that actually happens.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do we know anything about the relationship between Rachel and Leah?
So we're gonna see a little bit when we get to the Dudaim. The Dudaim are the flowers, the mandrakes, which they had a discussion about, and they made a deal over. But we don't see a whole lot about their relationship prior to that episode with the Dudaim, when Reuven finds these flowers in the field, and we really don't see a whole lot, to be honest. That's really the only encounter that the two of them have with each other. And otherwise, they just seem to be loyal wives to Yaakov. So that when
it could be a tremendous amount of jealousy, anger.
It could be, but it could also not be.
Right.
Okay. In other words, Rachel could be dealing with her own devils and her own demons because she sees her. I mean, the pasuk says that Rachel saw that her sister's having children and she's not. You know, again, what does that mean? How is it fair for us to ascribe jealousy? I mean, the Torah says, "V'tekaneh Rachel b'achosah," that she was jealous. But what does that mean? Meaning, was she always jealous of her, or was she just jealous of her situation? Meaning, was she happy for her sister? Maybe she might. I mean, look, if they didn't share a husband, I would imagine it would be a different story. Most sisters in a decently healthy relationship, when their sister has babies, they're happy. I'm an aunt, right? I'm very happy. I love my sister's kids. But when you have the same husband, which is not pretty common nowadays. But they have the same husband, and that's what's going on. So, you know, who knows? Especially since, you know, our understanding is that Yaakov preferred to spend a lot more time with Rachel, which, you know, probably doesn't require too much commentary, as opposed to with Leah. If each time he happens to be with Leah, and who knows, if it's once a year, she happens to get pregnant, right? You know, so does Rachel need to be jealous of Leah? She has a husband all the time, and Leah just happens to have babies. So, you know, far be it for me to try to figure out the human side. We have enough to worry about. Okay. So the Midrash Tanchuma again, Parshas Vayetze Siman Yud Beis in the Buber edition, says the following: that Davracher Lamaisa Snua Lo Shaisa Kiora Mi Rachel. Why was Leah hated? Not because she was more disgusting than Rachel, right? Ella Shaisa Yafel Ki Rachel. She was as beautiful as Rachel. Shenamar Ulavan Shtei Banos. Torah tells us that Lavan had two daughters, and what does that mean that he had two daughters? Shavos Benoi, Uviofi, Uvizkifa, they were, you know, essentially identical. I mean, he's not necessarily saying that they're identical, but Shavos means that they were equal in beauty, in, right? Noi means one kind of beauty, Yofi is a different kind of beauty, Zkifa means in gait or in their height. So why does it say Enei Leah Rachos? So again, you know, here the Midrash also mentions the idea that she was crying, okay? And then, what it says here—that's why her eyes became weak because of all the crying. Skip to the next part, which is in bold. So after Yaakov leaves, Yaakov left at the end of Parshas Toldos. Esav went ahead and married the daughter of Yishmael. So Amar Yaakov b'shvil brachos ha'mivakesh dargeni uchshetol zleya ishto. So Yaakov had another issue that when he came, he says that Esav wanted to kill me because of my brachas. Right? Lavan wanted to suggest to Yaakov that he should marry Leah, right? Because that the older daughter should get married first. He says, if I take Leah, who's designated to be, you know, Esav's wife, who knows if he's going to get rid of the daughter of Yishmael, Machlas, and say, hey, Lo dayecha shelakachta b'chor rasiyu b'rchasi. Not enough that you took my birthright and you took my bracha, you're also taking my betrothed. Leah, the figa chamar lelavan, evadcha shevashanim b'racha. And that's why Yaakov comes along and says to Lavan, I'll work for you for 7 years in order to marry Rachel, hoping that in the meantime, either Esau would show up and take Leah, or somebody else would take Leah. And this way, Yaakov is out of the equation when it comes to that. And he could just marry Rachel, his own attendant, and ended up the way that he wanted it to be. And so, in the end, Lavan, you know, pulled the trick that he pulled off. And the Gemara actually talks about that, where that Midrash Tanchuma says that when. Or it was put in both the Gemara and the Midrash. I'm sorry, in the Alkei Shemoni, they talk about how when Yaakov told Rachel that he is Achi Aviyahu, that he was her father's brother. Now we know what that means. It means relative. But Rachel said, "Literally, you're his brother. You're not his brother. Your mother is. He's the brother to your mother, but not to you." And Yaakov was basically saying, "I know that your father's a trickster. I can deal with him with trickery too." And so what's going on over here is that he says, is that the Midrash is saying that Yaakov was very well aware that Leah could be given to him in place of Rachel, and so he was saying, "No, I'm prepared for anything." He wasn't prepared for anything, obviously, because of what happened. But after he married Rachel, the pasuk says, "Hischil mechava yoter meLeah." He started to love her. Well, the pasuk doesn't say, but he started to love her more than Leah. And God had said, "Already noticing the Leah banim k'deisha tehei chaviva yoter meRachel." Yet God decided to give Leah children so that she would be more beloved to Yaakov than Rachel. Now, did it work? I don't know. You know, in the end of the day, it really depends on your perspective, right? We know where Rachel was buried, and we know where Leah was buried. Right? Where was Leah buried? Next to where? No, Leah.
Oh,
Leah was buried next to Yaakov. So, you know, what does that say? Now, we know the reason why, we know reasons why Rachel was buried where she was. We have answers for everything. Okay, but the fact of the matter is that who's buried next to Yaakov? Okay, the answer is Leah. And who's taken out of the picture sooner? Right? And we don't know when Leah died. We don't know. But we do know when Rachel died. And it seems pretty clear when Rachel died that that was out of the ordinary and that Leah was probably still alive, okay, at that point in time, presumably still alive, and that she died later. I'm sure she must have been alive because Yaakov was explaining that Rachel, I didn't have time to bury her where I buried Leah, then that means that he did have time to bury Leah when he did bury Leah, and that's so she's presumably alive. Okay, so now that gets us to, as I mentioned before, a couple of different things about Leah's eyes that the commentaries talk about. So this is on the bottom of this second page. So the Ibn Ezra famously has one of the most the greatest insults of all time when it comes to this. He quotes, he says that Ben Ephraim Amar Shu Chaser Aleph. He says Ben Ephraim says that the word shouldn't be Enei Leah Rakos, it should be Enei Leah Aruchos, which means that Leah's eyes are long, which you know might be more recognition of people from the Orient, let's say. The Asian culture, or maybe from certain islands out in that neck of the woods. I don't know. But what does it mean to have long eyes? I don't know. The longer they are, the more not round they are. So what does Ibn Ezra says about Ben Ephraim? He says, "V'hu aya chaser aleph." He says he should be missing an eye. He should be missing an aleph. If you take away the aleph from the word Ben Ephraim, you know what you get? Ben Parim. The son of cows. So some call that the greatest insult that Ibn Ezra ever pulled off. He's saying that Ben Ephraim is an idiot. Now, Ben Ephraim may have been a Karaite. A lot of Ibn Ezra's insults are targeted towards Karaites, which is a different discussion. Anyway, that's one idea. Another one is the Rashbam, who says that Rachos means Naos. They were beautiful. And a bride whose eyes are beautiful, you don't need to look at anything else, because the eye is the doorway to the soul. What else do you need? Okay, that's another interpretation. The Rabbeinu Bachaya quotes Ibn Ezra's insult. Okay, look at the Das Zakenim. He says, "Enei Leah Rakos Lashon Rach V'Tov." Klamar Shai Zaniris Yafe Mitok Shayu Enei Yafos. That she was beautiful. She had soft eyes. When you describe somebody as soft eyes, what does that usually mean? Usually, it means the person's beautiful. I mean, that's what it means to have soft eyes. Just a very loving kind of feeling, which is extended from the way that the person looks when you actually connect to the eyes. The Balei HaTosfos, their interpretation of the word rakos is weak. What does it mean, weak? Not, I don't know if it has anything to do with vision, but it says that they were weak and the wind were harmful to the eyes. And that's why it was Rachel who was able to be a shepherd, whereas Leah was unable to do that because she had weaker eyes. Okay, but it doesn't mean anything other than that they were sensitive, more sensitive, but not it's not a depiction of her appearance or her looks. Right? There are people who have sensitive eyes. That doesn't mean that they are ugly. That's not a fair jump to say, oh, sensitive eyes, therefore ugly. That's not the depiction. Now, does it really matter, if Rachel is, if Leah, rather, is more homely than Rachel's beautiful? I mean, I don't know. The Torah, sometimes it describes women as beautiful. It also describes Yosef as being beautiful. So what does that all mean? I don't know. Why is that important? I don't know. Beauty, as we all know, is in the eye of the beholder. Okay, so that's what we have about Rachel and Leah. And in the end of the day, the big question is, what was their relationship? So Nancy asked that before. So the main thing that we know about a relationship, or at least what the Midrash really draws out, so I have here, all these Midrashim kind of say a similar kind of idea, that Yaakov and Rachel anticipated that Lavan was going to pull a trick, and he was going to switch the bride on the night of the wedding. And right, and if you look back at the Gemara, for example, it says that Rachel gave Leah signs, simanim. What those signs were is discussed in some of these sources, but some kind of code, let's say, that Yaakov would know that this is his bride. And Rachel gave this stuff to Leah. Right, the pasuk says that Yaakov wakes up in the morning, v'hinehi Leah, and behold, she is Leah. And so the Gemara says, what do you mean, behold, she is Leah? Until now, she wasn't Leah? I mean, what does that even mean? And the answer is that in Yaakov's eyes, he assumed that the lady who was with him was Rachel because of the signs. Okay, now I have another interpretation I saw that I discovered some years ago. That Yaakov, the pasuk says that when Yaakov married Rachel, but Leah rather, that Lavan made a mishteh gadol. A mishteh gadol. What is a mishteh gadol? A big party. Okay, but mishteh comes from the word drink, and that the big party was a drinking party. And contrast that to the party which took place when Yaakov married Rachel a week later. You know what happened at that party?
Nothing.
It's a trick. It's a trick question. There was no party. Lavan did not make a mishteh gadol. So one of the commentaries says, I don't remember who it was, but he says that basically Lavan made a party for the first wedding, and it was a BYOB. Okay? And that was it. BYOB, and Lavan basically, you know, finagled and made everybody else pay for the party. And but it was also get the chassan really drunk. That was the goal. So that when Yaakov, you know, marries the lady and agrees and all that stuff, he doesn't really make a tremendous inquiry because he's plastered. Which, if you think about it, makes a whole lot of sense. How many people get married and then, you know, when they go back to their hotel, apartment, house, whatever it is where they're going to be after the wedding, they look at this person and say, oh, wait a second, you're not the... I mean, now hopefully everybody's marrying the person they intended, but the idea that you don't know who it is doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless you're drunk and wasted. And so I really like that interpretation because it helps me understand in a way that others don't. Like this idea that there's signs, so what? At the end of the day, like her face is her face, right? So, you know, I mean, I don't care how dark it is.
Well, if we open the possibility that
they were twins. Right, okay, fair enough.
If it's dark, you don't see the eye difference, if there is, in fact, an eye difference.
I'm not going to deny that it's possible. Okay, you know, and obviously the line of thinking that we find in the Chazal is that Rachel gave Leah whatever signs, and whatever signs they were, you know, were supposed to be an indicator. I mean, look, in the end of the day, right, so if Rachel and Leah were otherwise identical, for example,
and the only... Friends,
same, but I'm saying, but if they're identical enough and the only distinction is the eyes and the eyelashes, you know, okay, you know, right, and it's dark. Okay, I mean, fair enough. But the same. Anyway, so but that's the direction. So I have here a source from Masechtas Ketanos, Masechtas Kala Rabati, that says that Rachel, you know, gave up everything for her sister in order not to have her sister embarrassed. He come Ayla Laleas Sabrashta Michsefeya Achse. That basically Rachel realizes what's going on, and she realizes that her sister is going to be tremendously embarrassed, and so she gave Yaakov the simanim. Okay, again, and I don't know what the simanim were. The simanim, was it a code that she's going to tell him? Is it some rats have pink tails, you know, and elephants have pink snouts? I mean, I don't know what the code was. Okay, but the or was it something that she had to show him, or was it something that she'd be wearing? I mean, I don't know. Okay, so and in the Midrash Seichel Tov on Vayi Baboker, he said, look at the part which is in bold. He says, "B'shul sheRachel b'tzniusa masra simonel miYaakov lachos shelo tzvayish Rachel, because she was so modest, she gave the simanim, the signs to Yaakov from Yaakov to her sister, so her sister would not be embarrassed. Zachasa v'yatsu mimena banim tznu manchesod, so she merited to have modest children come from her." Yosef could have easily told over that he had been sold through a letter, or he could have just told his father. But he didn't do it, so that his brothers would not be cursed. You find the same thing about Shaul. Remember, Yosef is obviously the son of Rachel, and Shaul came from Benjamin, another son of Rachel, that Shaul, after he had been anointed by Shmuel, he's going around, and the pasuk says about him, "Yes, dvar melucha lo yigidlo," that he, I believe, he met his father, and the fact that he had just been anointed king by the prophet, you know, which might be the kind of thing, hey, Dad, you know what happened to me today? You know, we can keep this between us. The prophet anointed me to be the king. He didn't even do that. He didn't even do that to, I believe it was to his father. And similarly, Esther. Esther is from the tribe of Benjamin. Ein Esther Mageres Malata. Right? Mordechai told Esther, don't say anything about yourself. So Esther comes in, and she's Achashverosh, you know where you're from, blah, blah, blah. And Esther says, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So that is a quality of modesty that was given over to Rachel's descendants on account of the way she was. Okay? Now, just in terms of the question that I mentioned before, so the Midrash Sechel Tov does address it. Okay, and it says, how is it that Yaakov does not know who she is? So the Pasuk says, so not the Pasuk, the Midrash says, Melame Chekibu Aneros. So it shows us, A, that they put out candles. They put them out. In other words, it was, like Jerry said, it was dark. Amar, Lama Atem Mechabin Aneros. Amar Lei, V'chi Mevazin Anu Nishosenu L'shamesh L'or Aner. So Yaakov presumably said, why are you putting out the candles? And the response was, do we embarrass our wives to have relations to the light of the candle? That's not nice. We're modest people. Okay? And that's what gave her the opportunity to not be recognized. And the only thing that she was able to provide was the simanim, was for the signs. And of course, if it's something which she needed to show him, so that's easy enough. If it's something which she needed to tell him, well, when you're whispering, it's very easy to hide your voice as well. And, you know, in that kind of circumstance, a whisper could be totally appropriate. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's the next one. That's the next one.
Okay.
Okay, look at the next one, which is, so the part which is underlined. This is in Eicha Rabbah. It says that Rachel, when she is crying for her children, right, that's the context of Eicha Rabbah, is that Rachel is saying that everything that she did, that she gave up everything in the world for her sister, for her husband, like she gave up everything. But not only that, right, in other words, she allowed her sister to marry her husband, okay, and gave up her hopes and dreams. She didn't even know that Lavan would, a week later, allow her to marry Yaakov.
Or that
Yaakov would even take her at that point in time. Okay, which is just, you know, we have the benefit of hindsight that we know that Yaakov marries Leah, and a week later he marries Rachel, okay? But at that time, when he married Leah, he had no idea that he was going to get to marry
so
Rachel.
So, why am I wrong in thinking, I thought he had to work 7 years for Yaakov?
No, he did, but he did it, he married her, and then agreed to work for 7 years after that.
So, she was his wife a week later?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pasuk. Yeah. That's it's a common miss. Yeah, the Torah says very clearly that when Yaakov comes to Lavan and says, "Hey, I worked for 7 years to marry Rachel. Why'd you trick me?" Lavan says, "Malei shivu azos. Let's fill out this week. We'll finish Shavu brachos. Okay, v'nitna lecha gam azos ba'avodah shetasei medhi od sheva shenim achiros. And I'll give you the other one. I'll give you Rachel for work that you will agree to do for the next 7 years." Okay, so after, and it's in that, the pasuk says, that's exactly what happened. So yeah, and that's why Rachel is really upset after Leah has her fourth son, because Rachel's been married for basically the same amount of time, and she doesn't have a child yet. Okay, and that's the point. So what Jerry was alluding to is the part which is underlined here. Below Ode, Rachel is pleading before God and says, Elisha nechnasti tachas amita, that I hid myself under the bed, shayishokhi machosi, where my intended is sleeping with my sister, Vahimadaberima, and he was speaking with her. Vihi shosekes, she is actually quiet. Ani meshivaso al koldavar v'davar, and I'm giving the answers. I'm talking. Kadesha lo yakir l'kalachosi, so he shouldn't recognize my sister's voice. Vigamalti chesedima, and I did the most amazing kind of chesed. Because, you know, it's nice to give the code. You know, rats have pink tails and elephants have pink snouts. Okay, very nice. But in the end, hey, Rachel, remember that other thing that I told you? Remember when we were sitting on the veranda somewhere? Remember that thing? Yeah. Well, what was that? Shoot, Rachel didn't tell me that one. Right? So that's where that idea comes from, that Rachel knows, she can't, there's no way she can tell her sister everything. Okay, so she has to actually be there. Can you imagine what that's like? This should have been your wedding night, and you're underneath it all, okay? And just having and pretending in order to protect your sister. Unbelievable. Velo kinesiba, and I wasn't jealous of her. Velo tzitzila kharpa, and I didn't out her in order to have her be embarrassed. Yeah.
At some later point, I seem to remember a medrash where Leah kind of lashes out at Rachel, saying, "You took my husband."
Okay.
You took my what?
Husband.
That's a midrash. That's a pasuk.
Oh,
okay, that's the next thing. So that brings us into the next thing. So all of this is, you know, again, as emotionally wrenching as it is in the different directions that it's emotionally wrenching, right? Because, you know, you feel for Rachel because she's been anticipating this marriage since the minute that she met Yaakov, and you feel for Leah because, I mean, her what a miserable life she's been living, and now she's put into this, and we don't even know, by the way, if Leah even agreed, or, you know, if just Lavan is ruling over his daughters with this strange iron fist, and he calls all the shots. You know, we just don't know. I mean, can you imagine? Rachel's putting on the wedding dress, and Yaakov walks in, and she says, "Oh, bad luck, don't go out." And then, switch. Next thing you know, Rachel, out. You're going into some room where I'm going to lock you up. Leah, get in the dress. And does Leah say, "Oh yeah, this is agreeable, this is awesome"? Or does Leah say, "Well, wait, Rachel, this is not my wedding day"? And Lavan says, "It is. And don't you dare argue." I mean, I have no idea. I don't know what's going on there. What was Leah thinking? What was Leah feeling? I don't know.
But, you know, my whole view has changed now that I know that Rachel married him a week later. Then she didn't give up so much. I mean, she gave up, obviously.
But when Leah marries Yaakov, Rachel didn't know that she was going to be getting married a week later.
Okay. But, I mean, her misery only lasted a week.
And then it lasted for years because
she
didn't have any
children.
Okay, so yeah, relatively. But how quickly did she know? In other words, when the wedding is taking place, Rachel has resigned herself to the idea, this is it. She has no idea that Yaakov is going to end up having four wives when this is all said and done. No idea. Yaakov is intending to marry one. So that's it. Daddy decided it's going to be Leah, not me. That's it. That's my life. Yeah, it turns out good. But at the moment,
right.
At the moment, how is she to know that? Okay, so now that leads us to another aspect of their particular relationship, and that is the Dudaim episode. So now on the fourth page, which has a Dudaim episode at the top, we have a number of Midrashic passages here, which talk about it. So what are the Dudaim? So I mentioned before that sometime after the birth of Yehuda, immediately after the birth of Yehuda, Rachel gives Yaakov her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Yaakov gives, and Bilhah gives birth to Dan and Naphtali, and then Leah gives Zilpah to Yaakov as a wife, and she gives birth to Gad and Asher, and then, you know, then things are quiet, okay, whatever that means. Then Reuben, who's, you know, 4 or 5 years old, let's say, or three or four or five years old, is walking around one day and he finds these flowers, which are called in the Torah Dudaim, and he brings them to his mother. And Rachel recognizes that these Dudaim are some kind of aphrodisiac or some kind of medication or who knows, that she feels will help in her fertility. So she says to Leah, "Please give me of your son's Dudaim, of these flowers." And then they have this very difficult conversation where Leah essentially says to Rachel, "You know, you took my husband, and now you want to take my son's flowers." And so Rachel says, "All right, so take your husband, you know, let him be with you tonight, no problem, in exchange for the Dudaim." Okay, and the commentaries go crazy trying to figure out, was Leah being nasty? Was Leah being mean? Was Leah trying to inspire Rachel? Was she trying to say to her, "Hey, look, you know, you can think it's Dudaim, but really, you know, it's about your relationship, it's about your relationship with God, it's about prayer, it's about," right, which is exactly what Yaakov had essentially indicated to Rachel when she said, "Give me children, and if not, I may as well be dead." So Leah may be trying to inspire Rachel. And of course, as a result, the way the Torah describes it is they make the deal. Leah goes out to Yaakov that evening as he's coming in from the field, and she says, "You're with me tonight, okay? Rachel and I made a deal." And Sechor Sechaticha Dudai Bani, and Yaakov's like, "Dudaim, I don't even know what you're talking about, but all right." Comes back with Leah, and as a result of his being reunited with Leah, Yisachar is born, Zvulun is born, Dina is born, and then finally, Rachel, the Torah says, Rachel is remembered, and she gets pregnant with Yosef. Okay? Look what the Midrash Rabbah says. Ayin Beis Gimel, Latoma Rachel. Okay? Rabbi Shimon. So, second line. Tanya Rabbi Shimon, Lafisha Zilzla, but Sadat Fikhainach Nasimo Bekavura. Right? He's saying that because Rachel was essentially, you know, she said, "All right, yeah, take Yaakov. Look, what do I need him for?" Okay, not that she said, "What do I need him for?" She knew what she needed him for, but because she was a little denigrating about it, she did not merit to be buried with him. Hudhi amra la lachen yishkavi machalayla. So, because Rachel said, "For the flowers, all right, let him sleep with you tonight." Imach hu demayich imi lesu dem. Okay, that with you, it's good. Me, not so important. I'll figure it out all in due time. Am Rabbi Elazar, Zoev Sida, Zoev Sida. Zonis Takra, Zonis Takra. So Rabbi Elazar says both Rachel and Leah lost something, and each one was rewarded with something. Leah Suda Dudaim, Vinis Takra, Beis Shvatim Bechora. Leah lost the flowers, but she was rewarded with two Shvatim and the Bechora. I'm not really sure what that means. The Bechora. Presumably, that was referring to Reuven, but Reuven kind of lost the Bechorah, so I'm not sure. Rachel nistakra dudaim, yivsida shvatim uvechorah. Rachel was rewarded by getting the flowers, but she lost out on shvatim. Because if you think about it, how many shvatim are there? 12. Leah, at that point in time, had 4. Bilhah and Zilpah had 2 each. And how many were left to be had, to be born? 4. Okay? And presumably, they all should have gone to Rachel, because Rachel should be equal with her sister. But it didn't end up that way. As a result of giving up the Dudaim and having Yaakov that evening, Yisachar was born, and then ultimately Zebulun was born. So that means that the two tribes that perhaps Rachel should have had were born to Leah instead. Rachel, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, Amar, Zoh, Dudaim, and Yisachar Shvatim, Mukvura Imo, that what Leah lost was the flowers, and what she was rewarded with was getting 2 more Shvatim, 2 more tribes, and being buried with Yaakov, whereas Rachel, she got Dudaim out of it, she got the flowers, but she lost Hefsida Shvatim Kvura Imo, and what she lost was having the Shvatim and the Kvura with him, and being buried with him. And of course, that's indicating that the first opinion regarding the birthright, that who gets to have a firstborn is incorrect. And that's why Rosh Shmuel Bar Nachman says what he says, because the Bechorah idea doesn't really go to Leah, and it isn't lost to Rachel. Yosef in the end does get the Bechorah, and Reuven does not get the Bechorah. So that's why Rosh Shmuel Bar Nachman probably rejects that and changes it to be burial with Yaakov instead of, or not burial with Yaakov, instead of getting or losing the firstbornness. Okay. Now, there's more in that story. So the Bereishis Rabbah 72 also says in number Hey, that when Leah went out to Yaakov that evening and said, "You're coming to me," that she did it, she didn't even give him a chance to wash his feet. And there are some who are actually very positive about Leah's behavior here, and some are very critical of it. That she's so forthright in going out to Yaakov. Some say that after that, what ends up happening is her daughter, Bateitse Dina Basleya, the same kind of going outrightness that Leah exhibited, is what caused Dina to go out in Shechem, and we all know what happened to her in Shechem. Unfortunate, the very tragic story. So that's one possibility. Another one is that she didn't want to embarrass Rachel, right? Because if Yaakov comes back to the tent, where's Yaakov going to be presuming to go? Yaakov's going to go back to Rachel's tent, because that's where he's been. He doesn't know about the exchange which they made. And so in order to avoid embarrassing Rachel and embarrassing Yaakov, Leah goes out to Yaakov, which was not l'fi chvoda. It wasn't her honor to do that. Right? Rachel could have left a note on the tent saying, you know, Yaakov, just go go to Leah, or maybe Leah could have sent out a messenger, but that wouldn't be very modest either. So she went ahead and did what she did in order to protect both Yaakov and Rachel from embarrassment. Okay, and as a result, you know, this Midrash also says that she had Yisachar and Zebulun. And what's Yisachar's job? Look at the last line. Yisachar yoshev osu b'Torah. Yisachar sits and learns, or is involved in Torah. And Zebulun yotze b'yamim. And Zebulun goes out and sees. Ubav and osu b'tokvim shal Yisachar b'Torah rabba b'Yisrael. And he basically feeds Yisachar, and the Torah becomes essentially spread through Israel, because it's Zebulun's Torah learning which serves as a merit for Yisachar. Okay. All right. So, just to answer your question, look at the last two sources, and with this we'll conclude regarding Rachel and Leah, which I entitled "Catfights." Okay. So remember, when Rachel asks for the flowers, Leah's response is, "Hama'at kachteches ishi." It's not enough that you took my husband. And you also want to take my son's flowers? Okay? You know, what are they doing? Are they going to start rough and tumbling? Are they going to start pulling each other's hair? I mean, it almost looks beyond silly the way that they're talking and treating one another. So look what the Midrash says. Midrash Haggadah, Perek Lamed, Tezvav, Hamat Kachtech. It's not enough that you took my husband, whose heart pangs for you. Leah, he is not your husband, he's my husband. And he came here from Beersheba for my sake. He wanted to marry me. And because I gave you the signs, that's the only way that he was able to become your husband, because of everything that I do, everything I did. And Rachel says, so he can be with you tonight. The custom was Yaakov would be with Leah one night and Rachel a different night. And that night was Rachel's night. And she gave up that night. Now that's a pretty bold assumption that Rachel is raising. I have no idea that if Yaakov actually did that one night here, one night here, one night here, one night here, because that's not what Leah seems to be indicating. Leah says, you took my husband, which seems to imply that he is not spending time with Leah. I mean, I'm not going to say at all, but certainly not all that much, and certainly the same amount that he's spending time with Rachel. Okay, the Midrash Sechel Tov Lamed Tesvav. Okay, Tomer La Ma'ad Kach Teches Vegamis Ebeni. The Midrash says the following: Ba'ali Ayatchila. Right, so Rachel could say, "Look, the fact is, he came for me and he wanted to marry me." But Leah says, "The fact is, who did he marry first? Me," Leah says. "V'yat nichnas v'nas li tzara, and you became my tzara." You know what a tzara is? Tzara is the Torah's word for a second wife, not a second wife after divorce or second wife after widowhood. A second wife in addition to the first wife. Okay, that's the word tzara. So some people joke, but they're really being serious, that what is the definition of tsaros? Having a second wife. Okay, is a second. That's what it's tsaros.
Haman was called a tsar.
What?
Haman was called a tsar.
Haman?
Yeah. Haman. An enemy.
Ish tsar ve'oyev.
So tsar and tsara, they have no relationship?
I'm not going to say they don't have a relationship.
So tsara might be the English version. I mean the feminine version.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It could also be that it's a different time of Hebrew. Like, for example, now in Israel they speak modern Hebrew, right? They don't speak biblical Hebrew. Okay, but biblical Hebrew has its own development. What?
Lexicon.
No, but I don't want to say lexicon. In other words, the Torah's Hebrew is not the same as the Megillah Hebrew. Okay, that's the... they're related, they're similar, but it's not totally the same. So it's a good point. I mean, you know who would be an expert in that? Would be Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. Because a lot of his commentaries, he relates these kinds of words. But the definition of a tzara is a second wife. Okay, so that's what I just wanted to. Okay. So what she's saying is, Leah is saying to Rachel in this midrash, saying you became the tzara. V'nira davar me'apei now imaya amem degusha v'hei pesucha. So I wish Tomer la hamat. Is it there? Hamat kachteches ishi. I'm not sure which word he's going back to. No, I'm not sure which word he's referring to. Mem and the hay. I'm not sure. Okay, so I can't do that. Tomer a lot. Nope. Okay. So let's skip to the part which is the end. So it's towards the end of the almost the one line below the middle of the line. Klamar halayla hazeh, Rachel was saying he'll sleep with you tonight, meaning just tonight. It means just tonight, just like in that pasuk, it means just today. V'chein hashana means just this year. K'gon hashana ata meis, like the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, when somebody's told this year you're going to die. Tani Reshbi, that she was so flippant about it. All right, he can be with you tonight. Because she was so denigrating of who he was, right? In other words, if Yaakov is, I mean, basically what the Midrash is saying, is if Yaakov is deciding that I'm spending tonight with Rachel, then it's not for Rachel to say, forget it, he can be with you tonight. So because she was so flippant about it, lo nichnasayim al kubura, she wasn't able to be buried with him. Sha'amra l'chein yishkav imach, l'chein hi shochev esima b'kvura. So when Rachel says that he will lay with you, it doesn't just mean tonight, it means le'olam va'ed, forever and ever. Because yishkav could mean, you know, as a husband and wife, quote-unquote, sleep together, but it could also mean lay next to each other, together, for eternity. So when Rachel said, l'chein yishkav imach, he will lay with you, it doesn't just mean tonight, it means for eternity in burial. Am Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Leah of Suda Dudaim, Vinistak Reshne Shvatim Gvura, that's what we saw before in the Bereshis Rabbah, that Leah lost her flowers, but she was rewarded with two Shvatim and burial. Rachel Nistakra Dudaim, Yuvsida Gvura, Rachel was rewarded with the flowers, but she lost out on being buried with Yaakov. Okay, so you know we see here. I don't know how much it's a question of the relationship between Leah, Rachel, and Yaakov, but we did see a little bit about how we are to understand the way they're depicted in the Torah, just in terms of their beauty. And the main takeaway is that the depiction of Leah's eyes is not an indication of beauty. It's more an indication of just life experience. The idea of in fact, her eyes being depicted the way they are could be a sign of beauty. We saw about the signs that Rachel, it seems, is the real hero in that story, allowing for Leah to get married at all, and making it happen so that Leah would not be embarrassed, and so that Yaakov in the moment would not be embarrassed. And then finally, we saw the Dudaim, the way in which they had a conversation, and whatever it is that was resulted out of it. In the end of the day, what was resulted was, on the one hand, that Leah was gifted Yisachar, Zvulun, and Dina, and on the other hand, Rachel finally got the first child that she so desperately sought. Maybe she figured out that it's not just Dudaim which make a baby, but it's prayer and a relationship with God and a different kind of relationship with one's husband, her case Yaakov, that would bring things to a change. So these sisters, they did a lot for each other in the end, and whether they were actually rivals is hard to say. The only thing that we can say certainly is that with a very rare exception, sharing your husband with another woman is probably not a very good idea in the bigger scheme of things.